prohibit unrated product for children. We feel so strongly that state-mandated enforcement is unconstitutional that we filed suit in Nashville's Federal District Court on April 12, 1989, challenging the constitutionality of the Tennessee statute. And as of yet, the state has not responded. We are waiting for their response. Moreover, SB 1086, which restricts the rental of unrated product for children, impermissibly equates the absence of a rating with product that is unsuitable for children. Such is not the case. Under this proposal, the rental of family-oriented videos such as the Walt Disney's Mickey Mouse series or Sesame Street would be prohibited, even though the material is not objectionable for children. We would like to point out to the committee that there are alternatives that could advance the objective of protecting children without incorporating the rating system into state law. We believe that the best way to address this issue is by amending state obscenity law to prohibit the rental or leasing of obscene materials on video cassettes to minors and thus apply existing laws, which already covers motion pictures shown in theaters as well as cable, and apply that law to motion pictures released on video. Current obscenity law in Oregon does not prohibit the rental of obscene videos to minors. As a result, the rental of obscene or harmful videos is not prohibited by law. We suggest that this approach would eliminate the loophole and would not raise the same constitutional concerns that are raised by SB 1086. Again, the MPA does not take a position that any regulation of the industry is inappropriate. We do not believe that. We have supported laws that we believe are constitutional, that follow what the Supreme Court has required. But when the laws go beyond those narrow parameters, we are concerned and we feel we need to express our opinion. And we thank you for allowing us to do that.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, we took the liberty of drafting a suggested amendment, which would do as Gail suggested. ORS 167.065 is furnishing obscene materials to minors. And we have a suggestion I'll leave with the committee on how video could be included in that law.
Thank you. And I'd also ask you to figure out for us how to amend SJR 10 and HJR 20 with something quite that simple as well.
Chair, before you leave, since you made this trip from New York and I may not get an opportunity to ask this question again, I don't understand why it would be constitutional to expand the definition of obscene material and regulate videos, but to regulate them in this manner is unconstitutional as a violation of the Due Process Clause. It's still the same end result, and that's where the constitutionality comes, isn't it? What's the difference?
I would suggest that it is a different result because the RNX ratings do not fall within the guidelines of what the courts have said is or is not obscene. You can get an R rating for the use of one four-letter word in a sexually suggestive way, and that would not be obscene under state law or under the Constitution.
So the use of the rating in determining whether to rent or not to rent is the constitutional problem. It's
Absolutely.
Not the regulating of the rental itself. Okay.
Yes, that is exactly.
I mean,
I'm in an uncomfortable position. It is our rating system. The MPA has created, we administer it. I police the ratings all over the country to make sure that they are not misused by people. We want video retailers to use them. I speak at their conventions. I attend their regional meetings. We are all for use of the rating system. We just want to see it done in a voluntary way, as is done by the theater owners. We speak to groups of theater owners, too, to let them know how important their continued commitment is to voluntary self-regulation. And we think bills like this get that message across, too.
Go ahead. I feel compelled
to point out something I'm sure you already know is obvious, and I think that there is quite a difference between somebody who owns a theater and the kinds of people that sometimes sell videos. I mean, you can buy those out of the backs of gas stations these days and virtually any place else. I think that you have a different group of people that's in the video business, not that they are better or worse, but I think they're not as susceptible to voluntary standards as the movie industry, where they have a tremendous capital investment, commitment, a certain level of commitment that isn't maybe there with the video vendor who may be here today and gone tomorrow, depending on whether he can make money renting videos.
But I think that one of the answers to that is video retailers that are not concerned about the public's well-being in general will not be patronized by repeat customers. The public has the ability to vote with their pocketbook and to vote with their feet. I wouldn't do business with a vendor who did not follow standards that I thought were appropriate. I think the public has that option. And in actuality, most video retailers will not rent to children off the street. Most video retailers will only rent to their parents, or if the parents have given the children a video rental card. And again, the parents do have the opportunity to apply restrictions, and the video retailer is not concerned enough to listen to the parents' wishes. There are a lot of other video stores in the neighborhood that would.
Spoken like a true lawyer.
Madam Chair.
Senator Schumacher, and then...
I just want to know who this belongs to.
I think it belongs to the video.
The VSDA drafted that consent form and is distributing it.
You got a problem with that?
Not really. Not by voluntary usage of anything. It's a great idea.
Madam Chair,
I got to go. That's
before we move on, we've been asked to go to labor, and I still have my bill here.
What's your bill?
Would you like to hear it today?
We need to hear it today so that we can get Senator Grinsky excused for 5 minutes from
before we
labor.
Move on, I do want to probe on one thing. I am interested in your suggestion we get at this through the obscenity laws. I think that may be an appropriate way to do it. I'd like to get at it also through encouraging the video industry in some way to adopt its own code of ratings. And they said they had a copyright problem with the motion picture.
We have discussed that from trade association to trade association, and that discussion will continue as to what we can do to encourage further use. And quite frankly, I have been asked to investigate that by the Video Trade Association.
Okay. So it looks like things are moving along in that direction, or there'll be some self-policing with the video thing.
We speak frequently on this, and we try to encourage.
One other point, it's becoming increasingly evident in our society that obscenity deals with usually sexually explicit material. As bad a problem, maybe worse, is violence. Now, have you any thoughts about a way we can get at violence also, so that pictures which are unduly violent and which would thus provoke a violent response or violent behavior in children be also guarded in some fashion?
Well, I would suggest that the best way to handle product like that would be, again, by urging the compliance with the rating system, because, again, a good deal of that product would be either R or X rated, and the enforcement of the rating system would keep that product out of the hands of children. The problem with regulating violence is, you know, how do you determine how much violence is too much violence? Is it 2,000 GIs storming the beaches of Iwo Jima, or is it one person being shot at close-up range?
Same problem in defining obscene when you're dealing with sexual material, and society has grappled with that, and we, like other states, have got statutes, I've just been looking at them here, that define obscene, and we're doing the best we can with that. Do you know whether some states have grappled with the problem of violence and have come up with a definition that draws a line in some way between what's safe violence and unsafe violence in terms of the reaction of the
no
viewer?
No state has passed such a bill.
No state has dealt with that yet.
We're going to ban television.
I'm all for that, too.
So Jack has a question.
I know you just got in recently, but did you have a chance to review the Henry case when you were...
I'd love to get a copy of it from you. And
get your answer satisfactory. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Let's move on to Senate Bill 685. Senator Grinsky.
You want me to go down there, kind of, or from
you can go wherever you want.
I think I can be real brief with this thing. This is going to be probably the first in a series of conceptual bills.
Good.
This was a real good idea that somehow kind of got haywire down in LC. What it is, in essence, is the existing, for those
right.
people,
blame staff.
Well, I'm good at doing that. It's, I think, a prerequisite for the job.
Right.
But what this is, in essence, is I had a constituent who pointed out a problem, which I was not aware of, but it is a very real problem we've discovered. And what that is you're all familiar with the spotlighting laws, and what that is you can't use a spotlight to go out and hunt at night for animals. They just stand there, and it's a real easy way to kill animals, and that's against the law. But the problem is that the law, as presently written, requires the officer to actually see the light cross the animal. So he can, he or she might be able to see someone driving in the woods with a loaded weapon or a bow and arrow, using a spotlight, clearly hunting for the animals, but never actually see the light cross an animal, and therefore not able to apprehend them. It's a real problem. I can tell you from my own experience in Southern Oregon that poaching animals is a real problem down there, as well as I'm sure other areas of the state. So what we wanted to do was amend the statute, and somehow went from amending to creating a whole other section, and that's where we're going to have to do a little work. But what we want to do is eliminate the need that the officer actually see an animal in the spotlight. And so what would happen is we would make it unlawful for a person to cast from a motor vehicle a light so long as they had in their presence a bow and arrow or a loaded weapon. So that's basically it. But we have an officer here to testify who I think can do probably a better job of explaining the problem, as this is his specialty, Major Lee Hyder. If he would come forward and give a brief synopsis.
He is signed up, that's great.
I'm going to have to leave to go down to that labor committee, but just a question just occurs to me as we're discussing this. Could I just ask that of Senator Grensky? Would it be possible to make a bill that would create a presumption of intent to poach if found with a spotlight plus weapons? Then that would put the burden of proof upon the defendant to show that he was there for some legitimate purpose. Leave you with that question.
You don't drive around at night with a spotlight and a loaded. Well, there'd be no reason to have to do that.
Create the presumption. Don't even have to turn the light on, maybe.
Well, if the light's not on, then you're not. There's no problem. You're not going to see an animal then. But if you're out there using even your headlights to look for animals and you've got a loaded weapon in your truck, there's no reason for you to have that unless you're trying to poach.
So maybe then that would seem to support concept of creating a presumption of intent to poach, which would be a crime.
Well, we don't do that now, though. The way the law presently reads, if the officer sees the animal in the light, if he sees you driving and the animal's in the light and you've got a loaded weapon, you're there.
No problem.
Class A misdemeanor. So the only difference is we're not asking for the animal to be there. So I don't know why we'd want to back off of what we already have to create a presumption.
I'm not suggesting that
we
would, but
we'll work it out. Jack has it. The captain or lieutenant? Captain Hyder is here, and we'll work around with some of that. We've got one more bill, Senate Bill 404. Deborah Wilson is here, and Steve Anderson. I'd like to get that covered before we adjourn, but for those of us who have to stay and go, you'll appreciate that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lee Hyder, Major of the King Division of State Police. I'll be extremely brief. I do not have a written statement. I came to address 685, and after arriving, I discovered that, as drafted, it's not what we're really going to be talking about. There's some problems in the drafting. The concept behind Senate Bill 685 addresses a serious problem faced statewide that's been brought to the fore in Jackson County particularly, and increases, strengthens the restrictions against driving around, shining a spotlight either at animals or road signs, shooting your gun at livestock, property, big game mammals. Those restrictions will help enforcement in terms of preventing this type of activity, controlling it, and apprehending people that are poaching or are shooting at folks, cows, and things like that.
Good. So you're going to work with Senator Grensky and Jack and get in shape for us that will help you do what you need to do in terms of monitoring that kind of activity. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that quick hearing.
Good. Senate Bill 404. Deborah Wilson is here in favor of it. It has to do with non-expunction of records.
Mr. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Deborah Wilson, and I'm here from the Department of Justice, and I'm here on Senate Bill 404, which was introduced by the Department of Justice on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. The purpose of the bill is real simple. It basically would prohibit expunction of certain Class C felonies and certain Class A misdemeanors involving child abuse. Basically, it would be those that involve criminal mistreatment in the first degree, rape in the third degree, sodomy in the third degree, sex abuse in the second degree, sex abuse in the first degree, promoting prostitution, as well as endangering the welfare of a minor. The current law, of course, allows expunction of these crimes. The real purpose of the bill would be to guarantee that a criminal record of such child abuse would be available to programs or individuals who are responsible for caring for children. Presently, a juvenile or adult convicted of sexually molesting or criminally mistreating a 2-year-old could have his record expunged for an adult at the end of 3 years and for a juvenile at the end of 2 years. If later on they apply to be a daycare provider in your home or in a group home, a foster parent, a Fairview aide, a nursing attendant, a teacher's aide, Boy Scout leader, YMCA camp counselor, or so forth and so on, they really are able to say no, that they do not have such a record, that they have not been convicted of such a crime. And in fact, the statute states that. The crime, the record, and all records of that crime would be sealed. And in fact, they have the ability to say no, they have not been convicted of this kind of crime against a young child. The second purpose of the bill would be to help in investigations. Basically, sometimes expunctions of these kind of crimes can really hamper investigations by police agencies for subsequent cases of abuse. A detective investigating an allegation of child abuse would not be aware of a previous conviction for a similar crime if the conviction was expunged. If they pull up the criminal record, it is not there on the criminal record history check itself. Unfortunately, you're going to find from the experts, and I'm sure you've already heard already, that once a person's been convicted of this kind of an offense, involving a child, there really is no guarantee that they have received any kind of treatment or counseling and that they are not going to re-abuse. A perpetrator of child abuse really can serve his time and then be released. And in Oregon, unfortunately, the release date is earlier and earlier because of overcrowding. An individual who abuses children often is a multiple or repeat offender. In one Oregon study of 53 child molesters and rapists at the Oregon State Hospital, those 53 men reported that they had committed 25,000 sex offenses, which included 7,000 child molestations. Again, even in an Oregon study of 53 men, it shows that they are repeat offenders often. The average age when they were first arrested and convicted was 26, an average age of 6 more years passed before these men received any form of treatment. Programs that deal with children need to be aware of an individual's history of child abuse and treatment prior to placing these abusers in unsupervised contact with children. Certainly, this wouldn't forbid a program from ever hiring someone who, in fact, did receive treatment and was no longer a risk to children, but it certainly would help out these kind of programs and these kind of providers in terms of deciding, making the decision to begin with, whether or not these people were still a risk for young children. One of the reasons why ODAA became concerned had to deal with the case of State v. Bomar. In that case, there was a plea bargain down from a rape to a sex abuse in the first degree, which was a Class C felony. 3 years and 4 months had passed. The trial court basically denied the expunction, saying based on the seriousness of the underlying crime, the nature of the offense, the age of the child, that 3 years was just too short, wanted to give it 5 years before they would expunge the record. The Court of Appeals basically said, based on a Supreme Court decision, that they could not consider the nature of the offense, only if it was expungible, listed as one of the expungible offenses, that they could not consider if 3 years was sufficient or not, that they could not consider the fact that there had been a plea bargain, they could not consider the age of the victim, or could not consider the eligibility for licensing. This is a real concern for some local DAs, especially if you have a very young child. Often you will plea bargain it down so that you do not have to put the child on the stand, but to still get a conviction. And because of their feeling that there is a lack of clear judicial discretion in these cases, and because, again, oftentimes these individuals at the end of 3 years, once their record is expunged, may in fact become involved in job employments or voluntary activities where young children are involved and the children may be at risk, they ask support, and we ask support for a bill that would limit expungement for only those Class C felonies and Class A misdemeanors that we've listed. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Springer.
How important is the juvenile section of the bill?
Well, presently, of course, if you're 17 years old and you've been convicted of this kind of crime and you have it expunged from your record and you reach, you know, 19, 20, and you do want to be a big brother, little sister program, you want to be a bus driver, you want to be a teacher's aide, you want to work in a daycare center, Fairview AIDS, Oregon State Hospital AIDS, again, if we check that record, it would be expunged. We would not know that. And I'd like to say that all juveniles who are convicted of these kind of crimes receive treatment. That certainly would be the best of all possible worlds, but it just doesn't occur. Consequently, they've done their time, they've graduated from the juvenile system, and in fact, they are without treatment. The possibility of those individuals reoffending is actually high given the statistics that we have. So it is important.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hill?
This only applies to convictions?
Correct. This only applies to convictions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have Steve Anderson.
Good afternoon. Senator Cohen, Senator Hill, and Senator Springer. Steve Anderson here on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. We oppose this bill, and I might say that the problem of recidivism among criminals is not unique to sex offenders, and although there is sex offenses which involve children has been a concern perhaps more largely recognized today than it has been in the past. I don't have any statistics, but I would suggest that recidivism, repeat offenses, is common among all convicted criminal offenders, including shoplifting and going all the way up. And so much of that rationale about repeat offense applies equally as much to across the board. And for that reason, I think it's kind of unfair, fundamentally unfair, to single out one category of offense. And the reason I say that is it goes against the reason we have an expungement statute in the first place, and that was stated fairly clearly and shortly by the Court of Appeals in State versus Hammond, which is 34 ORAP 893 at 897. That was a 1978 case, and which, by the way, concerned the same kind of offense which we're talking about. In that case, the court refused to grant an expungement because the statute had been overturned subject to after the conviction occurred. The Court of Appeals said this. It said that the state's reasoning was erroneous, and it ordered that the expungement be granted. It said, this reasoning misses the point of ORS 137.225, which is the expungement statute. That statute is intended to clear the record of those persons convicted of any of the enumerated offenses who have demonstrated their ability to be a responsible citizen. It thereby removes a cloud from the efforts of those persons to find employment and social acceptance and otherwise bury the past. And I would suggest to you that that perhaps is the other side of the coin to the rationale that you were just presented with. And it is a balancing equation that you have to engage in. To be a little more complete, in the statute as it's now written, there are some sexual offenses currently exempted from the expungement statute, but each of those is either a C felony, rather an A felony or a B felony, and all of the felonies that are contemplated by this bill are lesser felonies. They're all C felonies. And I think that reflects a concern on the part of previous legislatures that C felonies should come within the purview of the expungement statute and, in effect, give a person a chance to come back and rebuild. There are those people that commit just one offense, and many of them are, I would say, motivated by the fact that if they seek treatment, if they are convicted or if they plead guilty and they successfully complete treatment, that they can expunge their record. And so I can't dispute the statistics that were recited to you with respect to the numbers of people who get treatment, but I can tell you that expungement is an additional motivation to people to follow through on any court-ordered treatement that they're given.
Senator Hill.
Yes, I wonder, what was the date of that case that you cited?
1978.
Well, you know, that's, I think in 1978, I think by that time, we were just starting to really, as a society, face up to the whole issue of child abuse. And it really, and I could be wrong, but it wasn't until fairly recently that we really started to enact laws that have a different attitude toward child abuse. And I'm not saying that rationale is not, but there's a lot has happened since 1978, and some of the bills that you have opposed, I mean, you're being consistent, but some of the bills you have opposed would not have been introduced in 1978, because I think we're just at that point starting to face up to what a serious problem child abuse was.
In all candor, Senator Hill, Senator Cohen, I can't dispute that. Not to take issue with what you said, but I think the whole question of crime has changed to a requisite degree across the spectrum.
Great. Thank you very much. We are adjourned. Finished a very long agenda.